And then we've got a. Do you know of the term Sangoma?
No.
No. Okay. Do you know the term a witch doctor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, there is a fundamental difference between the two, but for our purposes, let's go with that. But I'm going to use the word Sangoma, and you can think of witch doctor, but, you know, it's not in a negative connotation whatsoever.
Okay, yeah. It's like a good witch doctor.
Absolutely. Okay. Sangoma is very much a spiritual healer, a herbalist, and also a keeper of the traditions, a historian as such. Mm-hmm. And there's a very high Sangoma called a Sanusi, which there are only two of in the Zulu nation in South Africa. His name is Credo Mutwa,
mm-hmm.
Who's talked about his personal experiences and also some of the knowledge that he was given as part of the initiations in, as becoming a Sangoma. And he was ostracized by most of his own people because of, you know, speaking about things he said he wasn't allowed to speak. But him, like a lot of other traditional leaders all around the world, knows that the times are changing, and that, you know, the kind of situation where you pass on very deep information from one person to the next, that time has basically passed, and the information now needs to be spread on a wide basis to everybody. He had an abduction experience himself, and during one of his initiations, part of it was also to eat part of the flesh of one of these gray beings, which has a kind of a hallucinogenic effect, as we understand it.
Oh, wow.
Which is very, very interesting. Credo Mutwa is also, as a Sanusi, he trains other Sangomas. He's trained more than 500 Sangomas himself.
Oh, wow.
And he's a very, very special person. He's also the keeper of some very old traditional ornaments and also a breastplate indicating the little gray beings, and also specifically, you know, a saucer-shaped craft hanging off this very heavy bronze breastplate that he puts around his neck. And these things are, you know, it's very, very clear. It's not ambiguous whatsoever. And this goes back in their history, you know, since also they are aware of. They know that there are different beings interacting with Earth. They know that there are reptilian beings living inside the Earth. David Icke especially came to South Africa to interview Credo Mutwa. And they became, you know, very good friends. And Credo Mutwa has, from his traditional knowledge, confirmed a lot of the research that David Icke has done, which is also very interesting. And then Credo Mutwa is also one of our best sources of information on crop circles in South Africa, believe it or not. And we do have those. He says that what is very interesting is that these formations do go back very far back in recorded history, in their recorded history of the Zulu nation. And they considered this as very sacred, and they would erect stones around these circles, and they would never go into that area, and they would know basically, you know, long after the corn has gone and, you know, other things have grown there, the stones are still standing. And this has been quite a source of mystery in Africa. And most possibly in other parts of the world as well, where we find stone circles,
yeah,
you know, just singular stones standing upright in a circular formation, and it's been quite a mystery as to the purpose of what that could be, and the way that Credo Mutwa describes this makes a very plausible explanation, and he knows of such cases going back at least until the 1800s. But also, obviously, long before that, he's seen crop circles himself and investigated them. And part of his job is basically to investigate mysteries. And he knows quite a lot of the Illuminati conspiracy, you know, that mm-hmm. the secret world government and, you know, New World Order, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He knows quite a lot about individuals who has come to Africa to promote that kind of agenda, you know, through all the years. So people such as Cecil John Rhodes and the likes, he's had a very tough life. He's never been afraid really to speak his mind, and because of that, obviously, as you can imagine, you know, there's lots of people who I would literally stone him if I could. As far as we can tell, his son was actually murdered as well, because most probably because of, you know, some of these things that he's been revealing.
Wow.
He's more famous outside of this country than he is here.
Yeah, I've heard of him through his work with David Icke, so yeah, definitely.
Yes. Yes. There's one more, at least one more that I want to definitely mention.
Okay.
There was also a book written about this called The 12 Planets Speak. This is a contact that started in 1960 in the town called Durban, which is a coastal city here in South Africa. And we're going to use this the pseudonym for this contact because he's never wanted any kind of attention and his real name used.
Okay.
I've made contact with him myself. I know who he is, and he's still alive, and the contacts are still going on. Basically, what happened, excuse me, in 1960, he was working at a furniture factory, and there was a position that was open up in the factory, and the guy who filled this position was somebody new. Nobody knew where he came from. Nobody knew him at all. They became good friends as time went on. They went on, you know, early morning fishing trips together, and they talked about all kinds of things, philosophy and whatever. But Edwin was a very simple guy. He didn't really care much about, you know, anything mysterious or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He was just living his practical day-to-day life. And during a couple of the early morning fishing excursions, they would, you know, look up at the sky, and at some point, you know, his friend would just bring up the topic that, you know, what does he think of life out there? And Edwin would say, yeah, well, you know, it's way too big. You know, it's most probably life out there. And then one morning, his friend said, well, look, what if I can prove it to you? And so, you know, Edwin was taken a little bit aback, and his friend took out a radio unit out of his bag and just adjusted a little bit, and they actually heard voices coming from this radio unit. And then he said, in about 10 minutes' time, look in that direction over the sea, and you'll see a light. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, they saw a light. This light came closer, came very close to them, and you know, they could communicate through the radio. There was nothing special about this radio. In fact, it was an Earth radio. It wasn't from anywhere else. The only difference was that it didn't have any kind of a power source. You know, it wasn't hooked up to the electricity or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was receiving its power straight from the communication from this this craft. Eventually, Edwin was asked to become the representative of this confederation of 12 planets. They are very much human-looking, very much similar to us, and they claim to be coming from an antimatter universe. So it's kind of like the polar opposite of where, you know, the kind of matter that we exist in.
Yeah.
If that makes any kind of sense to you.
I'm trying to wrap my head around it, but yeah.
Now, there's a lot of information, technical information, that they did make available. They you know, gave him information to make available to people that are interested, and he was given this radio unit when his friend had to leave, which was after about 2 years of living here.
Mm-hmm.
And he was regularly communicated with. They've recorded audio tapes since that time, thousands of them. A lot of the tapes have disappeared. Like I said, the contacts are still ongoing, and it's a very, 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 very credible and interesting case.
Wow.
I think there is also some information on this on the internet. If people want to find some information on this, the original document was called A Message from Koldas, which is the planet where Edwin's friend comes from, specifically in the Confederation of 12 Planets.
How do you spell Koldas?
K-O-L.
Yep.
D for donkey, A-S for sugar.
Nice, okay.
Koldas.
Awesome, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, these are fascinating stories. I didn't even know anything about the contactee history here in South Africa.
Yes, yeah. There's a few more, not too many, but yeah, there are a few, and I'm hoping, you know, as we do our exposure in the media that we there is an organization such as Sound for in South Africa. We're hoping that more people will come forward with the stories.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Sound for is sort of like the latest, I guess you could say, in ufology history in South Africa. Talk a little bit about that history of people studying the UFO phenomenon. You said that you had like a list of 10 groups there. You don't have to go through all that, but just tell me sort of about the evolution of people having an interest in the UFO field in South Africa and maybe compare and contrast it somewhat to what was going on in America, if you know about that kind of thing. What was the situation like in South Africa for people trying to get to the bottom of the UFO mystery throughout the 1900s and recently?
Yes, I would say about the time that NICAP was infiltrated by the CIA, about that time was when Elizabeth Klarer had her contact experiences, and she was also basically given the task of trying to educate the public on the reality of extraterrestrials. By the way, her contacts came from our closest star companion, Alpha Centauri, to our solar system. And apparently there is some interaction on a regular basis with the people from that planet called Meton. And Elizabeth Klarer then, did what she could, and she started a group called Contact International. Mm-hmm. A lot of emphasis were put on more the metaphysical side of these kinds of contacts and the philosophy, the spirituality, that kind of thing. And that has been, if I can maybe say, the flavor of the kind of research that has happened, mostly up until, I would say, about 1995 or so. Mm-hmm. From that point on, we had... I do apologize. There has been a group called EQ4, who has been operating since about 1985. And MUFON also had a chapter here who conducted scientific, UFO research.
Yeah.
And investigating cases and making sure that the media, didn't distort the information. The MUFON chapter that still exists in South Africa, they see their role mostly as a media watchdog. They don't actually do interviews. they leave that part up to me, which is quite an interesting relationship we've got going. I've always fostered the belief that the different groups need to do the research together and share the information, because it's no use reinventing the wheel. There's no ego involved here. We want to help the public to get access to information, and it's also not about telling people what to think or believe. But there are a lot of people who want to get their hands on the information. And how can you possibly form an informed opinion on something which you don't have access to the information?
Yeah.
So that is our mission, is to collect the information and distribute it. There has been a few other smaller groups, and not much documentation, unfortunately. So the most of the information I do have comes from people who's either been a member, or if they've had some kind of a small printed newsletter, then I would have some information on that. But that kind of research is still ongoing as to the actual history of UFO research in South Africa.
Yeah, so it sounds like it was sort of on the fringe a little bit, in the sense that it if you don't really know the history that well, then it's not as well documented, I guess you could say, as the American history.
It's not well documented at all. I can mention a few now. Yeah, Elizabeth Klarer was a pioneer, and then Cynthia Hind as well, because Cynthia Hind is the only person who's really, really published a lot of information. We also did have a very small little book called Let the People Know, who was written by a guy called Oliver Nags in 1963. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. And he in his little book, he talks a lot about newspaper reports of the time and him having a stack of these things and just randomly picking from his basket and then, publishing it in his book.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of research needs to be done in the newspaper archives. There's been a bit of a blockage for me personally to be able to do that because there's newspaper archives all over the country, and they don't have everything on a centralized computer system database. And they say that if you want to come and do the research, you need to come here.
Oh man!
So it's and I'm hoping to still get some help to do all of that. But we, you know, our sightings database basically we've got about 600 or so sightings on the database already, and it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Sounds like it. I guess to sort of move into some of the big picture elements that may be at play here in South African UFO scene, what's the role of the military like as far as the UFO phenomenon goes? Are they, you know, kind of along the lines of the U.S. government in that they do the investigations and then you don't get any information back from them? But
yes.
But how extensive is the military involvement? You know, in the UFOs, as far as you can tell,
we've had a bit of an interesting situation, and yes, I totally agree with you that the methods that are being used for dealing with situations as they are occurring, and also with leakages of information, that kind of thing, are very similar in America, in South Africa. But there's been one major difference. Any kind of research that's been wanting to be done from the public and request made for information has basically just met on deaf ears.
Yeah.
That's how they deal with it here in South Africa. And they just hope that it goes away, and then it, you know, eventually does. They don't feel like they need to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. And I find that very arrogant. And I will do what I can to reverse the situation. You know, we are paying the salaries of these guys, and they are our servants, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it should be. I can give you an example. We've got a very sensitive military installation here in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Simonstown earlier. It's very close to Simonstown, which is our naval headquarters, and this military base I'm referring to is called Silver Mine Military Base. Now, there's a lot of things going on there, which most of the people in public don't know about. One of the departments that got there is called the Southern Air Command, and their sole duty is to monitor all air traffic and to give permission, you know, for overflights in the Cape Town area. This, like I mentioned earlier, this is one of our most sensitive military installations. And what is very bothersome to me is that the American embassy, a new American embassy, was built a stone's throw away from this place, even though a perfectly well-maintained embassy was in Cape Town itself. Now, why this would happen now in the last 2 years, I don't know. But according to my information, there are underground tunnels connecting these two facilities through the mountains. And that, to me, is of grave concern. You know, why would one of our most secret national defense installations be, on a constant basis, be connected to the American embassy? It doesn't make any kind of sense to me.
Yeah. You said, like, they try to ignore it, like it'll go away. That's kind of how the American deals with the UFO situation now, for the most part. But does the military ever come out with regards to UFOs and make any sort of statements or anything to even to downplay this? Like you said, that thing about they said it was a military exercise and the light was bouncing off the clouds. Is that pretty much the extent of their role in dealing with the UFO phenomenon as far as the public is concerned?
No, basically what they would do additional to that is that if you do request information, they will send you information, things that have been reported in newspapers, but things that are very, you know, it's not very credible information.
Yeah.
And then that they will basically try to pacify you in that way, but they don't really feel like they need to officially say anything.
Yeah.
I also once went together with another veteran UFO researcher here in Cape Town. Her name's Pam Puxley. She was one of Cynthia Hines' investigators for many, many years. And we together went to the Silver Mine base, and we requested information on, you know, what do they do there. And they sent us away saying, no, you know, you can't come in here, but you can go and speak to a public relations officer at the naval base in Simonstown. And then we had our second annual conference coming up. This was in just before 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And So we wanted to find out from, you know, the National Defense Force here in South Africa what the official policy was.
Yeah.
Or indeed anything. And so we went to this public relations officer, and he was very kind and listened to our story and didn't laugh more than we thought he would. And he said, no, as far as he knows, there is no official policy on UFOs in South Africa. And then he offered to phone the headquarters in Pretoria and just to confirm that. Which he did, and we listened in to the conversation, but obviously we only heard what he said, and we didn't hear what the other guy said on the other side.
Yeah.
But he apparently spoke to a general called Piet Retief, which is quite funny for our people here in South Africa, because that is a major historical figure going back in the politics of South Africa, very, very long back.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, then basically the first thing that General Piet Retief asked him was, let me say it this way. You know, the question was posed to General Piet Retief, you know, what is the official policy? And without answering the question, he asked the public relations officer, are you a member of their group? So I thought that
your group?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So I thought that was quite revealing in itself.
Yeah.
And then they had some kind of a long major conversation, which, you know, we only heard the one side of, and we were called, me and Pam Puxley, by this public relations officer, we were called walk-ins, which we had quite a chuckle about us, you know, amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that's some kind of a military term that they use, you know, for somebody out on the outside.
Yeah.
And then eventually General Piet Retief confirmed that no, there is no official policy on UFOs. And then I asked if I can get that in writing, and I was refused.
Huh.
So, you know, another thing that I tried to do to get some kind of official confirmation is I got the address to write to the president's office of South Africa. And apparently, you know, the track record of answering these letters are very good. Now, I wouldn't imagine that, you know, the president Thabo Mbeki would answer it himself. Obviously, he can't do all of it. But his personal staff did. And I received a letter in 2 weeks' time saying, thank you for your request. It's being processed, and it's been referred to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism without any explanation. Now, to this day, I don't know what that reasoning is behind that referral, because I'm asking here for official documentation on current or past research on UFOs or whatever else other term they would use.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's referred to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. And then sure enough, another 2 weeks go by, and I get a confirmation letter from the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism saying, thank you for your letter. It's now been referred to the Director General's office, Martinus van Schalkwyk. And that is where the trial ended. You know, we made about 14 follow-up calls. You know, I've got the dates and the times of these things, and the numbers I dialed. I published it as well. And, you know, there was always just promises made that, you know, it has been dealt with, and, you know, haven't you received your letter yet? And, you know, and we, you know, nothing has come from it. That's where the trial ended, called a suck.
Wow. That is strange.
So, I'm hoping to use a similar method and maybe get to like a public mass action, just to get like thousands of people just to write the same letter to the same people.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Hey, it's worth a shot. Now, what about the role of the media down there in South Africa? Now, I understand you guys have a pretty free-flowing media down there. It's a pretty. Maybe I'm wrong, but
it's a whole range of situations. I mean, we've got our tabloids, you know, and we've got the daily press, and we've got our weekend press, and we've got the radio news and the television news, and but it is. I saw a bit of statistics the other day on this, and you know, we are a little bit more free apparently than you guys in America with press. But I can tell you from my personal experience that when I started doing interviews, I would always basically just get funny calls from people phoning in and asking questions. They would ask things like, you know, what did you drink? You know, what did you smoke? Or that kind of thing. But that's to be expected. Well, and the other thing, obviously, is, you know, you're a Satanist, or, you know, it's evil, and, you know, you shouldn't talk about these things. And then I sort of eventually made peace with that and realized that, you know, if I don't get calls like that, then I've got reason to worry.
Yeah.
But the media in general have been very impressed with. They're very objective mostly. Like all media in the world, they don't always report accurately. They fill in the gaps with imaginary details. That has sort of disparaged other UFO researchers in the past in South Africa to deal with the media whatsoever.
Yeah.
And this is where I most probably have got a bit of an upper hand in the eye of the public, especially with doing the kind of research and people not really knowing about anybody else, is that I've not been afraid to do interviews. Mm-hmm. If people contact me, I do the interviews. I've been on television as well 4 times now. The kind of feedback is very, very positive. I found that I think this depends a lot on your own individual personality as well. You know, how much are you approaching this subject with fear, with skepticism, or with paranoia? You know, the more paranoia you are, you know, how shall I say, exuding, the more you are attracting.
Yeah.
And I don't focus on any negative aspects whatsoever. I basically just want to make information available so people can make up their own damn minds. And that's very positive. Just found that the kind of responses in general, obviously there's been a few, different cases, but in general, the media's interest has improved tremendously. And it's very much open reporting. One of the projects we're working on at the moment is to construct our own UFO monitoring stations. And one of the biggest newspapers in South Africa is covering it quite openly.
Here in America, we kind of have what we call like the giggle factor, which is sort of like just how when the media covers the UFO stories, it always puts it at the end of the news broadcast and sort of ties in like a little joke at the end. There's a major news story. On occasion, a UFO story will break into the mainstream news here in the U.S. And then, like I said, it'll be at the end of the news, and they'll kind of like laugh about it. And that'll sort of be it. Is the situation better in South Africa in that regard, or is there still that sort of ridicule surrounding the subject as far as the media goes?
It's actually a wide range. We do get a little bit of all the situations, but mostly the reporters are quite independent and they do their own thing. They're not too limited in having to toe the party line.
Yeah.
Depending on the personality and most probably the editor, mm-hmm. if they want to put a kind of a funny slant at the end, then yes, that does happen quite often.
And sort of the last, I guess you could say, tenet of big picture analysis here, what about the general public down there in South Africa? You kind of said that they're sort of rigid, I guess you could say, in their belief system as far as UFOs, pro, con, or all the range, I guess you could say. But what would you say the attitude of the general public is in South Africa with regards to the UFO phenomenon?
I've been pleasantly surprised. The situation is mostly where people just can't imagine that there isn't life out there in this amazingly vast universe, and you know, we are the only intelligent life. Just most people would actually like to actually get their hands on something physical as evidence, mm-hmm. Or you know, actually meet a being or something like that. And I always sort of try and get people to think about it a little bit differently. I would use examples of things that not everybody experience themselves on a personal level, but everybody knows that it's possible. Things like, this is a bit of a crude example, but I mean, you get the situation where people are raped, and you know, not everybody undergoes that experience, but we know that it happens. Mm-hmm. And the similar kind of thing with the UFOs and extraterrestrials. Now, most people are quite open to know that there are things that are happening every day that we just don't know anything about. The most common kind of feedback that I get from the average guy on the street is that, why should I care?
Yeah.
What difference does this make in my life? Because a lot of the people are survival-based mentality. Where's my next meal coming from? you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I've also looked a bit at the psychology from Abraham Maslow, where he's got that pyramid of the hierarchy of human needs. And if you sort of understand that pyramid, you see the bottom rung of the human need is the survival issues. And if your mind is occupied on that constantly, you don't have time to think about the things that go up the pyramid, which, and at the right at the top of the pyramid, is self-actualization. And, you know, if you can create a situation where people can spend a bit more time on, you know, who am I, where do I come from, how do I fit into the bigger picture, there are quite a few people in that situation, and it's very, very easy to talk to them about the subject. For them, it's very natural. But for the survival-based mentality, you know, they just, why should I care? That's their attitude.
And then just to sort of throw back to the media here in the States, here in the U.S., we have kind of like a paranormal boom going on as far as the Discovery Channel type shows and that sort of thing. Is there anything like that down there, you know, programs centered around the paranormal, or is it not breaking through yet there?
We don't have as big an industry of creating our own programs. Mm-hmm. Besides soap operas in South Africa. We're hoping that we can still, you know, create more documentaries. And in fact, that's one of our projects as well, is to actually create our own documentaries. We want to do one on each major case, and also then obviously international news and important information that can help people to make up their own informed opinions. We've got lots of programs and lots of interest in paranormal series and movies. You know, movies like Independence Day and, you know, Signs, Mel Gibson, that kind of thing always are one of the best, they always go on top of the best viewed or attended movies that are shown. And, you know, The X-Files was a very, very popular series here in South Africa. And then also now, you know, people are quite taken to people who have special abilities, like series like this year, Heroes, I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And 4400, that kind of thing. And then also another series called Invasion. It's been very, very popular down here in South Africa.
Huh. And just now we're jumping back into the general public. Sorry about jumping back and forth. What's the attitude for the general public, and I guess for you folks in the UFO community, with regards to the American influence on UFO studies down there in South Africa? Like, you already told me about this Botswana thing with the crash and everything, and how the Americans ended up with the craft and two out of three of the bodies. And there's a lot of, in other parts of the world, there's sort of a tinge of, you know, distrust about the Americans with regards to UFOs. Seems like the U.S. has all the good stuff. and maybe, you know, maybe the ones who are kind of behind any sort of cover-up that may be worldwide, you know, maybe the it seems like they're at the crux of the whole issue. But what's your perspective as a South African on that attitude? Is it something that the people down there feel and think, or is it something, you know, that maybe we just think here in America that you guys resent us because of you know, the central nature of the UFO phenomenon here?
Yes, Tim. In general, it's a bit difficult to answer that. You know, I can sort of give you a few of my own personal viewpoints, but in general, we don't really talk about any kind of American influence. Like I say, most of the people here are survival-based mentality, and they basically just focus on what's happening today.
Yeah.
They don't really care too much about what's happening in America, besides if it's affecting maybe the oil price, you know, things like that, because that literally affects everything in the economy. But regarding specifically the UFO issue, no, we don't see the Americans as, you know, controlling much or being ahead in any way. We know that the controlling situation is an international thing, because we do a lot of, always when we're getting reports from America, we're also getting reports from other countries at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's that's a very interesting way of looking at things.
So it's not sort of like the situation where, you know, you get a good UFO case and then you're like, well, you know, we better look into it as fast as we can because the Americans are going to come along and sweep this under the rug, kind of like what they did with Botswana or whatever. It's not that sort of situation.
No, no. We've like, for instance, the thing that happened at the Chicago airport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that spread on our internet news websites very, very fast. And, you know, it was broadcast on CNN as well, if I remember correctly. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, got their hands on that information. But it's not a situation where the people actually care much. You know, if something happens on their back door, then then that will sort of get them to jump up and down. But the general attitude is one of possibly more being entertained by the subject rather than wanting to actively get involved and dig in deeper. There's quite a lot of individuals, maybe freelance journalists, who would be curious and would dig deeper. But they always find that, you know, they can get to a certain point and no further than that. So a lot of people lose courage down the line very quickly.
And what about some of the other countries? Now, I know you focus on South Africa, so this is sort of a basic question, but what about some of these other countries that are your neighboring nations, like Namibia? We talked about Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Swaziland. Do these countries have their own ufology communities and their own ufology subcultures and that kind of thing, like America, like South Africa, like these other countries? Are they players as far as researching UFOs go, too?
No, not as far as I know. As far as I know, South Africa is the most active on this continent regarding the actual research into UFOs and related issues. There has been certain individuals that has contacted me over the time, over the last few years, but no centralized research organizations whatsoever. I know the Southwest Africa, the Namibia situation is quite interesting, especially for me personally, because there's a lot of Nazi German influence from during and after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that has any role to play with things not really, you know, coming out in the public where we are now. But there has been very interesting cases coming out from neighboring countries, especially such as Namibia and also Zimbabwe, where Cynthia Hine did a lot of research. But we find that the reason why South Africa is more active in this regard is because our information flow is more accessible. The rest of the countries in Africa are closer to more the third world situation rather than a developing country such as South Africa.
Yeah.
Where we've got a lot more electronic media, computers and televisions in the houses and things like that.
I don't know if you're familiar with some of these ancient astronaut theories that have gone around for a while and that sort of suggest that the original inhabitants of Earth came to, you know, from outside Earth. There are ETs or whatever, and, you know, they genetically engineered humans to mine gold. And I could have sworn that a lot of this sort of originated in South Africa. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. A local author called Michael Tellinger actually wrote a book called The Slave Species of God.
Mm-hmm.
He himself grew up in a gold mining community. So his whole life, you know, was pivoting around this whole gold issue and the obsession that people have with this mineral. When he came upon Zechariah Sitchin's work, you know, with the Sumerian clay tablets and the Anunnaki and, you know, the slave species actually created to work in the mines to mine this for the extraterrestrials, you know, things just started to make a lot more sense for him.
Yeah.
And he actually wrote this whole book on this subject. It's something that's very, very interesting, very plausible. I had a very interesting discussion last night as well with a few friends, and, you know, I asked the question, give me a good definition of what it means to be human. You know, I've yet to hear a good definition of what that means.
Yeah.
Now, why I say this is because I do consider the possibility that our genetics do come from various sources. And depending on who you speak to, that can be up to maybe more than 22 different genetic sources. And this would explain some of the ancient tribal knowledge, such as the, you know, the Dugon tribe in a country called Mali in Africa. Mm-hmm. Then they've got detailed information about Sirius and its white dwarf companion, which you can't see with telescopes. You know, how does a tribal group of people know about details such as that? And then obviously, you know, ancient Egypt and the Aborigines in Australia, the Native Americans, North America, the Bushmen here in South Africa. Very, very ancient peoples. And as far as I can understand it, they know that they themselves do not come from this planet. The Zulu nation here in South Africa as well, as I mentioned earlier with Credo Mutwa, apparently the name Zulu means from the sky. And not many of the people now walking on the streets today, you know, more westernized, actually know that.
Yeah.
But the historians of their own culture know that in no uncertain terms.
Interesting. And I opened up the interview here to some of the people who write for my website that they sent me. Only one person got back at me in time because of time issues. But here's what she had a question for you, and I'm gonna roll it out for you if you don't mind.
Yes, no problem.
Okay, cool. It's Rochelle Hawks. She writes the column Medusa's Ladder every Friday up in allofamerica.com. And here's her question. It's about racial issues within ufology and the white majority of ufologists. I'm not sure if that's in South Africa, or I know that's the case here in America. So maybe that's part one, I guess. And she says her theory has to do with lack of recent tribal-type magic slash myths. I'm not sure if she means America or South Africa there or not. I guess about the racial issues within ufology, if there are, what the racial breakdown sort of is in South Africa for UFO studies, and how the politics of race and place may have influenced your experience or your views or, you know, your way of doing research or anything like that.
Mm. Yes, okay, so if I understand correctly, I'm just going to repeat. The question is regarding if there's been any influence in the way that UFO research has been conducted in South Africa regarding any racial issues.
Yeah.
And I would categorically say no. There's been no such interference whatsoever or such perspective coloring. What I can say is that currently looking at the people that I know about doing research, it's mostly also white male, but I do also know of females as well. And then I do have members, you know, who are not white skinned. I've got members of all different kinds of cultures and also cultural backgrounds in my organization, but they are not necessarily researchers. I've got another Indian of Indian background of the country India.
Mm-hmm.
He's a researcher himself, and then I've also heard of another country in Africa, I think in Kenya. There's been a professor at the university, a black professor who was a UFO researcher quite many years ago.
Huh.
But yeah, that's an interesting point that she brought up. Mostly it is a white male kind of attractive force to become a UFO researcher, and why that would be something I must most probably still look into in the future.
Yeah, it's a subject that's come up a couple times here on this show.
Have you guys come to any kind of conclusions?
No, we're just kind of scratching the surface on it, and that you first got to, I guess, shine the light on the issue first and raise the issue, and then we'll figure out what the story is. But it's pretty interesting in that regard.
Yes.
And sort of like the last big picture thing to close the book, I guess you could say, on the UFO discussion, what are your big picture thoughts on UFOs? What do you think it's all about? What does it mean? What are they doing here? Based on all the stuff you've looked at, of course you don't have a definitive answer. Nobody has a definitive answer. But, you know, what's your theory, I guess you could say, on what we're experiencing here on Earth, looking up in the sky and seeing these things, and down there in South Africa, seeing them come down to the ground and land and crash and all kinds of other crazy stuff?
Yes. My personal perspective on the whole issue as to why this is happening, what our part in this whole thing is based on the fact that you can see from the research that has been done internationally that there's literally no part in our recorded history where these things have not been seen. They've always been here So for all practical intents and purposes, we are most probably part of them. It's not as if there's a difference. I would see us as part of a larger intergalactic community. Mm-hmm. It's maybe just a situation where we find that we are still adolescents, we are still very young, and we are now maybe going through a process, a transformative process, to become more active members in a larger cosmic family. And I do feel that we have been guided at some points. We have been interfered with from some people's perspectives. I choose not to look at it like that. But yes, I've got a lot of hope and a lot of positive feelings to what's going to be happening in the future. And I think also I want to add that these guys are not here to save us from anything. As far as I understand the messages, we are responsible for our own salvation,
yeah,
if you want to look at it from that point of view. And then once, you know, they are here to help us to help ourselves. And they are not here to do anything on our behalf, unless it is something major like a third world war. As far as I understand it, they do have the capability of neutralizing any kind of a nuclear weapon, even before it, you know, leaves the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they know where these things are stored, and they know where these things are in satellites around the Earth and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I don't have any kind of phobia about a third world war breaking out. I feel that this planet is a jewel in the cosmos. It's got a lot of diversity of life forms, and based on our own civilization and all the variety of things that we exist with side by side, we are very interesting to their point of view, the way that we are doing things. And I would most probably look at Earth as some kind of experimental planet, because of all the different influences. Nobody really knows what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Even though some of these guys, you know, can travel through time and can see what's going to happen in the future, most of the information that I find most credible, the guys say that, look, you know, when you make a choice, that affects what's going to happen to the future, and we make choices every moment, and the choices we choose to make is at the end of the day where we're going to be headed.
Yeah.
So I think it's at the end of the day more important for us to take personal responsibility and get this planet back to a level which is not as polluted as it is now, and we should actually help our children to become the best they can be as individuals rather than brainwashed, you know, sheep.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. Now, you said you're excited about the future. Do you think, you're a young guy, you're 32, I'm 29. Do you think you and me are going to see disclosure in our lifetime? Just UFO disclosure, of course, not something else.
Yes, I understand. I don't know. It's a catch-22. I mentioned earlier that I think that the control groups who are keeping this the lid on the information, or at least keeping a lid on the information, because obviously they have let some information come out. But I think that as the newer generations are taking the positions of these top decision makers in these control groups, it is possible that it will come out directly from them. But I think that it's most likely going to happen more from a grassroots level. From people like you and me standing together and demanding that our leaders take responsibility and reveal the information, because at the end of the day, our very hard-earned tax monies are paying for their salaries and all this research to take place. And we should see the benefits, especially regarding technologies, alternative technologies to generate energy that are non-pollutant. You know, the anti-gravity kind of propulsion systems, that kind of thing. And also other technologies which will help us to be more free as individuals instead of being dependent on systems.
Yeah.
such as the banking systems and all the problems we have with credit and you know, people not really knowing how to deal with that kind of thing, and stop enslaving people's minds. Let people be free. I think that's my final word.
There you go. That's perfect. You already kind of talked about, you get the documentary things you want to work on and stuff like that. What's next for you guys at SOFOR? What's next for Christo Lowe and the South African UFO Resource?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we basically in the process of registering as a non-profit organization. SOFOR has been mostly a one-man show up until now. And so, you know, with the troops coming in, hopefully we can get a lot done in a very short space of time. We're going to be obviously continuing with our annual conferences, which will be coming up in July again this year. And we will be building our own UFO monitoring stations. And that information will help us a great deal in our research, and then obviously to identify hotspots where we can go out and attempt to make contact with the guys that are here. And then also a major focus of what we're doing is public education. So I myself and a few other people will do public talks as often as we can, and continue with the media interviews just to get the people on the street to know more of the important issues surrounding the UFO subject, and then also obviously the control which most of us are experiencing but are unaware of.
Yeah.
So I find that you know, through UFOs we have an avenue to reach people who otherwise don't feel like they fit into any other kind of system or society or group, which is very interesting, because we do get people from all kinds of backgrounds, and you know, most of them feel like they can belong to a group such as SOFOR because they really don't fit in anywhere else.
Yeah,
and basically what we can do is to by focusing on our own personal development as individuals, we can also in that way get people together as a group to assist the planet as a whole, and then also help communities with basic skills development programs and get people out of this survival mentality mode so that they can focus more on self-actualization issues.
Absolutely. How about a trip to America anytime soon for you, Christo?
Oh, that will be fantastic. Yeah, no, my full-time research has been totally unfunded, and I'm a major part of our non-profit organization will be to focus on funding for our different projects, and then hopefully also to obviously get to America. I do have a friend who visits the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, mm-hmm. Nevada,
yeah,
every year, and then she brings a lot of information back to us. So which is fantastic, but I'm hoping to be in a position to possibly be a speaker at next year's conference there.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. There's an expression up here in America, they need to get off the schneid and bring you up here to America. Absolutely.
That'll be fantastic.
Well, Christo, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We've done 2 hours here, and I feel like we've only scratched the surface, and it's amazing. Folks, we've been saying it year in and year out on the show here. Ufology, it's not an American phenomenon. It's a worldwide phenomenon. And you've just listened to 2 hours worth of proof of that from Christo Lowe. Just a tremendous education for me. I learned so much here, and I'm really looking forward to the feedback we're going to get from the BOA Audio listeners when they hear this episode. I'm psyched to have had the chance to talk to you and have your first American interview be on an All of America Audio. I feel great that we've established a beachhead here in South Africa for BOA. If you ever want to get in touch with me, if there's ever a breaking story in South Africa, definitely shoot me a line. We'll bring you right back on the program. I have a feeling that this is going to be a back-and-forth communique for quite a while between the BOA crew and SOFOR, and I'm looking forward to that. Of course, the website is SOFOR.com, SAUFOR.com. Christo, thank you so much again for coming on the show, and I look forward to future adventures for us.
Thank you, Tim, as well. I think the work that you're doing is fantastic, and I'm very glad to see that us younger generation guys are also much more in the mood for working together than trying to shoot each other down and things like that, which some of the older guys have done. And I think that collaborating our research efforts, we will be able to get to closer to the answers we are all searching for, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel. And thank you very much to your listeners, and we're looking very much forward to keeping in touch in the long term.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 3. Big, big thanks to Christo Lowe for coming on the show, giving us so much of his time, and working around the time difference schedule-wise to make the appearance here on BOA Audio. Of course, you can find out more information on Christo Lowe at his website, www.saufor.com, saufor.com. We're going to try and keep it short and sweet because we're already way up against the deadline here for when the show should be posted. So we're going to skip BOA teasers on some of the new stuff that's coming up. We're also going to skip the listener feedback. Those things will be back next week, I presume, hopefully, as long as my schedule is a little more free. Instead, we'll just roll right into the thanks part of the show. Thanks, of course, to the fantastic BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Arlie, Joe V, Tina Senna, and Rochelle Hawks. Week in, week out, top-notch reading material, admin all of America. We just posted a new piece from Rochelle talking about the Mormon-Bigfoot connection. In this past week's Gray Matters, Leslie talked about that prickly word, believe. What is believing in something? What is not believing in something? Is belief knowing? All that great stuff. Very heady edition of Gray Matters this past week. Chiron talked about the rise of the machines, robots, and his latest fascination with them. And Regan Lee talked about the Stephenville UFO sightings and the trickster element to the Stephenville UFO sightings. So four amazing columns posted at BOA this past week. Definitely want to check those out at the website. As we say, week in, week out here on the program, if you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at Admin All of America, you're only getting half the story. The episode you just heard, my friends, 2-hour call to South Africa, that costs a lot of money, trust me. How can you help us pay for a phone call like that? Simple. You make a donation via PayPal at BOA. Go to Admin All of America. You'll see the PayPal button. Click that. It'll take you to the PayPal page. All donations go towards keeping BOA Audio and Admin All of America up and running and freely available for all of our great listeners and readers the world over. Next week on the program, we're going to have a very neat edition of the show. My friend Chris Balzano actually lives pretty close to me. We're going from 8,000 miles away to half mile away. Chris Balzano will be coming to the program to talk about his recently released debut book, Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal in Freetown State Forest. We're going to be talking about the unique setting that is the Freetown State Forest, which Balzano says lies at the heart of the infamous Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts. We'll find out about the colonial origins of Freetown and some of the modern-day oddities outside of the normal esoteric genres that we talk about here on BOA Audio that have been reported to emanate from the Freetown State Forest, including zombies, an amazing witch story, and the very strange Puckwudgie creatures that are sort of like trolls, but have been around apparently in the area for many, many years. Very fascinating stuff with regards to the Puckwudgies. We're also going to take a little dive into true crime, as we talk about the cult activity that plagued the area in the late 1980s. What is this cult activity all about, and some of the infamous cases in the area from that time? It's definitely a fascinating interview that goes off the beaten path of our usual esoteric discussion here on the show to cover areas that are oftentimes marginalized by the bigger esoteric genres. That's next week on the show, Chris Balzano talking about Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal in Freetown State Forest. And on that note, my friends, we're going to call it a week and try and wrap up the episode here and get it out to you in time. Thank you so much for your patience. I apologize for being so late coming at you this week. I'm hoping we can get back on track next week and have things rolling out on a fairly steady pace from here on out. Until you hear from me next week, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.